But what I want to share with you next is exploring some fun and interesting ideas around thinking of yourselves as a system. So we do NLP, one of the big influences in NLP is systems thinking and systems theory. And the idea behind that is that we are collections of systems. So thinking of yourself just physiologically. So you have your nervous system and your skeletal system and your muscular system and your, what is this, the epidural system? there's all these different systems within your body. So you're a collection of systems, even on just a physical level. Energetically, for those of you familiar with perhaps Chinese medicine or other energetic systems, that we have this energetic system within our body. We also have the mental system of our beliefs and our values and the way we think about the world. So we have all of these systems, and this mind-body-spirit system is the one big system. And the thing I like to think about is that you can enter the system anywhere you want. You could enter through the body, you could enter through the mind, you could enter through the spirit, you could enter through energy work. But once you're in the system, you're working with the whole system. And if you change one part of the system, it's going to affect other parts of the system. So with NLP, we like to explore things to go, one, we're curious, if you make some change, what difference does it make in the rest of the system? And we want to look for the difference that makes the difference. So to explore this, if you would, please take everything off your lap for just a moment. And what I'd like you to do is kind of scoot up near the end of your chair there, a couple of inches. And what we could do is we could explore, for example, the relationship between your physical, your posture, and your angle of vision. So now if you would just lean back in your chair, okay? Lean way back and notice what's that like. Not only noticing what happens to your attention, your angle of vision, but what kind of a mindset or an attitude you might go into in a state like this. So what are you noticing? You just yawned? Okay.
Less engaged and more reserved.
Yeah, less engaged. Okay.
Snoring?
Okay.
Wider perspective.
Like your attention widens out? Yeah. How many of you is widened out like that? Okay. All right. Now shift up and scoot your butt back so it's right in the back of the chair there and lean forward just a little bit. Okay. Like I'm going to say something really interesting. Okay. Now notice what that's like. What happens to your angle of vision?
Narrows,
okay. Get more focused, okay. What about any changes to like attitude or emotion?
Present.
I heard present.
Yeah, present to what's going on here.
Right. What others?
Anxious.
Anxious?
Yeah.
Anxious as in anticipation?
Yes. And also, you want to do something.
Okay. You're ready to do something. Yeah, ready to react to something.
Excited.
Okay. Excited.
Ready to jump and like catch the mouse.
Yeah, ready to pounce, yeah. Okay, isn't that fascinating? All we did was we shifted our position just a few inches, and all of a sudden it shifted all of these other aspects of our attention. Isn't that wild? If you, for example, as you're sitting there, and I'm going to need to kind of get down on the floor so my feet can touch here, but just sit and open your feet so that your toes are kind of pointed outward. And notice what that's like. If that shifts, what shifts when you have your feet out like that? You don't like it? So does it feel
vulnerable.
Just different? You feel vulnerable.
Protect my core.
Interesting.
Also more vulnerable, but also more open.
More open.
More open. Yeah.
More open. Okay. So now just shift and turn the toes in a little bit. How's that feel?
Contracted.
Huh? Did I hear protected?
Contracted.
Or contracted. Yeah. Contracted.
Yeah. It's guarded.
Guarded.
Closed.
Closed.
Insecure and shy.
Shy. Insecure and shy?
Yeah. Turn them in, yes.
Yeah. Now, I noticed some of you also like did this kind of a thing. Like you made your body smaller in addition. Okay, go back to open again and notice. So all I'm inviting you right now is just to notice the differences. Notice the differences in your perception or other aspects of your experience just by shifting your physiology. And we're not shifting in big ways, really. We're just, these subtle little shifts can make a huge difference. Now, not only does that shift within you, like it changes your state, but this can also have a profound effect on how other people, how you get in this interaction with other people, and how those subtle little nuances can change the nature of the engagement, change the nature of the interaction with other people. So we're going to explore something here called psychogeography. Psychogeography.
Larry?
Yes?
Are those things in the binder, or do I have to write everything down until I'm going to lose it?
That's a good question. I think most of it is in the binder. Sure. I think I'd have to look to see what page this is on. But I believe there is a page on psychogeography in the handouts. So just as a quick note, thank you for asking, Sebastian. A quick note about your handout. There is more material in your handouts than we will likely cover in the training. So think of those as additional resources, additional reading, references, that kind of thing. We wanted to put a lot of material in there to support your learning. But we may not cover everything along the way that's in the handouts. One of the wonderful things about training here with NLP-CA is that you're going to get a variety of trainers. So of course, you're getting me this weekend. You'll all experience Tim and Chris Hallbaum, I think, are going to teach together on the majority of the weekends. Damon is actually going to be one of your trainers here in the future. William Wood is another trainer that you'll experience, and Susie Smith. Now, the neat thing about having a variety of trainers is you get exposed to a variety of teaching styles and also get our kind of different takes and perspectives and so on. So some of what you're getting this weekend are Larryisms, okay? It's just my unique take, expression on NLP kind of a thing. And then you'll get a different one. When you have another trainer, they might have a little different perspective. Or because of our various backgrounds, we may have more information or less information depending on what the topic is. So I like using lots of visuals, the flip charts. So I like having it up there. I like having it ready for you to see so I don't have to draw it while I'm expressing it. And some of them are very old. They've become ancient scrolls. So the more tattered and bent and things like that, the more wisdom that chart has. So it's got more experience under its belt. So if you see any imperfections in my flip chart, just know that means that's a wiser chart. And you'll learn more just by looking at it.
So for people like Sebastian, would you have any objections to during a break or afterward, people using their cell phones to take pictures?
Please feel free. Yeah, take pictures of those if you'd like.
For some people, that's your learning style, but my learning style is actually I get it into the muscle by writing it out. So that's another option for you.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. That's another thing we'll explore in NLP are different learning styles. Some people are more visually oriented. I'm sorry, I missed it.
I don't know if I didn't get the last thing, but similar to his idea, is it possible for someone who has everyone's email maybe to take photographs of these with their cell phone and just email it to everyone?
Well,
everyone's gonna have every single person come up here and take a photograph.
Right. Well, we'll have to talk about that. We can talk about that with the resource people and see if that's doable. But certainly, on an individual level, you have my permission to take pictures if you'd like. And then we'll see if we can organize something like that. He's asking if somebody could take pictures of all of the flip charts, put them together, and email them out to everybody so that everybody could have them. And so I said we would discuss that and see if that's doable.
Comment about you were speaking about there's going to be a lot of different trainers, And it's also useful if you work with a lot of different people. Mm-hmm. So as, you know, try to kind of work with somebody different each time. I know you start to work with someone and you get comfortable with them, and then you want to kind of stay in that comfort zone. But as a stretch, I would like to encourage you to work with someone new each time you do something, and that'll give you a nice variety as well.
Yeah. Excellent suggestion.
Most learning is to be at the edge of your comfort zone. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. Expanding your range means finding the edge and then going out a little bit farther each time. Okay, so now where was I? Psychogeography. The psychology of space and positioning. So we want to explore how we hold our bodies in different ways can affect how people receive our communication. So just as an example, who would like to come up and have an interesting experience with me? Would you come on up, Alina? It's one of my trainer privileges that I get to shop for who the demonstration person is. Thank you so much for coming up. So we're gonna have a little experiment together. And so Elena happens to be one of my employees. I'm her supervisor. And I get to have an opportunity to give her some feedback because she's been late to work. Now, she is a wonderful employee otherwise, but she's just got this pattern of coming to work late. So now, as the supervisor, I've got to somehow give her that feedback in a way that she can receive it. So if I say, notice if it's very, very different. If I come up to Elena and I come right up like this and I go, Elena, I noticed that you came in late to work again this morning. And, you know, it's really important that everybody that works here come to work on time so that it doesn't throw off the other employees. Can I count on you coming into work tomorrow on time?
Well, I have to say sure, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, right. So what's your inner experience when I did it like that?
You were too close to me, so I wanted to back away.
Right.
And then you started really irritating me.
Yeah. So shake that off quickly. So I intentionally invaded her space a little bit, right? I got a little bit too close and I was very direct, right? Now, if I did it a little farther away, so if I came up and was maybe more about here, now you see how she just shifted instantly when I was at that level, she changed. Now, I may not know exactly what that means yet, but I noticed it. So just being in this position, so is this a more comfortable distance for you? Still not quite.
No.
Okay. If I go back a little bit more.
No, that's too far.
Too far. So right about here?
Probably, yeah.
Okay. So isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
Just exploring the difference and noticing how she responds to that. That's part of what we're also noticing, sensory acuity of how the person is responding. Now, if I'm on this side of you and about that distance, and if I were to give you the feedback from the side, say, Elena, I've noticed that you were late to work again today, and it's really important that the people that work here show up on time so that it doesn't throw anybody off. Can I count on you to come to work tomorrow on time?
No.
Still not working for you? And so what are you noticing inside?
I kind of want to turn around and leave, basically.
Okay.
You know, so I think it's probably less effective than you were.
Like right
really
in front?
Right in front of me.
Okay, let's explore this other side. So if I were to come up onto her other side and I say, Elena, I noticed that you were late again this morning, and it's really important that all of the employees here to come to work on time so that it doesn't throw anybody off. Can I count on you to come to work tomorrow on time?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for her, the position like side to side versus in front makes a difference in how well she can receive that.
Real, or did you just say sure because?
No, it was real.
What was different? I mean, it's just the side.
Well,
great question.
You know what? Basically, I think what it is for me, and that's very personal, is I have a scar on my face, and it's the right side of my face. So I think I want to hide that side of my face. So if someone's speaking to me from that side, that's probably what it is. I want to turn around.
Fascinating.
Probably the approach.
approach is going to be different for each person. So you probably need to know the person better to kind of find them.
Bingo. Right. That is the point of the whole exercise, is that everybody's going to be a little bit different, right, and how you approach. So we could explore, for example, one side versus the other. Now, interestingly, that she mentioned the scar. How many of you would say you have an internal critical voice? Okay. Now, if you go inside just for a moment and you listen to that critical voice, do you have a sense that it's like on one side or the other inside your, okay? So point to, like, show me where it is. Show me where that voice is coming from inside your head, okay? So for most of you, it's on one side or the other. Now, it could be, we could speculate as to how that shows up. Like maybe we had a critical parent or a teacher or something that maybe criticized us as children from that side, and so we have an association with that on that side. And so inside, it's like having a scar on the inside, right? That it's harder to receive that feedback from that side because there's an association there. Okay? That may be just one possibility among many possibilities. So we're just speculating. But notice there's a difference also. If I approach, so I'm going to stay here. This is the better side for her. And at that distance. But if I again hold my feet open and my hands up, notice how that's different. So Elena, I noticed that you were late again to work today, and it's really important that all of the employees here come to work on time so that they're not throwing each other off. Can I count on you to come to work on time tomorrow?
Sure.
Okay. So now contrast that with if I come up and approach and I do hands down. So Elena, I noticed that you were late again to work today. And it's, see?
Yeah, it's more authoritative. Like, I felt like you were trying to like be more controlling or direct versus mm-hmm. when your palms up, you're more requesting, so you're like more kind.
Uh-huh, yeah. Isn't that interesting? And I noticed it, the instant shift was pretty interesting, yeah.
It looks like you're identifying her as the problem. You're
yeah,
problem
exactly.
Here. So
right.
This way. The other way is more...
Like, let's cooperate.
Let's cooperate.
Okay.
So, you showed how you approach, what else does somebody approach you? What would you suggest Elena if you approached her one way and it made her feel uncomfortable? How should she change her position?
Well,
people always pull this stuff on you in business.
Yeah.
Always pull this stuff on you. Try to bully you or whatever.
Right.
Way.
So one thing is, if she knows that about herself, you see, and again, part of this training is you understand yourself better. If she knows that she has a preferred side, and if I'm her supervisor coming to give feedback, she might move herself so that she can receive it better. Okay? Or she may, it's also useful to go the other way. Like if you don't want to listen to somebody or something like that, you just put them on the side where you're not going to hear it, right? So it can be useful either way.
I'm just wondering, left and right brain has something to do with that. Because on my right brain, I am very creative, I'm really fun, loving person. And if someone comes on my right brain and saying, you're being late or something, I can't register, I can't receive this information. It's kind of, it's just a good idea. It's not right side. On my left side, I am more number, logical, and precise. Here's my schedule, and I can receive more.
It could be. That could be part of what's going on here. There could be some hemispheric aspect to it as well as to why people can receive a certain kind of information from one side or the other. Now, the research is mixed on that I've seen. There are some that strongly suggest there is hemispheric dominance. There's other research that says that the brain doesn't specialize hemispherically that way. So I would say it's probably easier and better just to notice how the person responds. If there was how they're responding in the moment.
The other thing to notice is your voice changes depending on how you approach them and your physiology.
How many of you noticed the change in my tonality when I went from here to here? It does. It changes you. Changes it. Right. So my tonality, and I'm literally trying not to do that, but you can't stop it. So now let's add the dimension of touch. Okay, so if I come up and I were to say, Elena, I noticed that you were late to work again today, and I, it's important for everybody who works here that they show to work, show up. Let me start again. Lena, I noticed that you were late to work again this morning, and I was wanted to let you know that everybody who works here, it's important that you show up on time so that it doesn't throw off anybody else. Can I count on you to come into work on time tomorrow?
Okay. Yeah.
So now I'm even a little closer, right? I'm still on her good side, but the touch, did the touch make a difference to you? Or?
Well, not so much, not really. Mm-hmm. I would still, well, maybe it made, I guess it made me a little bit uncomfortable, so I was a little bit less willing to cooperate, mm-hmm. but still, it was more of a positive response. Right.
So they did a study in 1990 on honesty in New York City. And what they did was they put like a $10 bill in a phone booth. You remember what phone booths are, right? So they put a $10 bill in a phone booth, and then somebody would come into the phone booth and find the $10 bill, and the researcher would come up and say, oh, I think I left some money in the phone booth. Did you find any in there? 70% of the people said no. They kept the money and everything. But they noticed one of the researchers consistently got back the money, and so they went back and tried to figure out why. And what this, the researchers did is they would go up and they would touch the person and ask. And so the conclusion was that the touch increased the likelihood of them being honest in their response.
I also read something about servers, if they touch a customer just really lightly, that they'll usually get a higher tip.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I remember there was also Tim shared years ago about a restaurant owner, and I guess in restaurants have the highest rate of employee theft, people stealing from their employers. And so they went in and discovered that when they would touch the employees, that it increased the likelihood of them not doing that. So interesting. Elena, thank you so much. Yeah. So what I'm going to invite you to do here, well, first, any other questions or comments?
A very quick one. That means you're saying touching people makes them honest. Or more honest.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far. In this particular study, it you know, but to make that broad generalization, I don't know, it depends. It depends.
You did this for 200 years now, 20 years. Mm-hmm. Would you say yes or?
I think it's a combination of factors, you know. If you go up and touch somebody and you got some weird look on your face, you know, it's like, you could get a different response. So touch alone may not necessarily do it. It's in combination and in context, you know. To go up and just touch a stranger is oftentimes very risky. But if you know somebody, if you have a relationship with somebody, it can probably, I would predict that it would likely enhance. Right.
It's that quick. If you sit there and touch, all that becomes uncomfortable.
Right.
It's like, you know, excuse me, and that touch, you know, get your attention, but it's socially acceptable.
Yeah, so that's another thing. The quality, duration of the touch, the placement of the touch, all of those factors can make a difference. What's another?
Can you clarify the term calibrate? Because I think maybe some people don't really know what that means.
Yeah, calibration. So calibration, it's part of the domain of sensory acuity in NLP. Where we want to notice the pattern of a person's physiology associated with a certain state, for example. So when you calibrate, what you're doing is you look at the person, like if let's say they were thinking of their present state, and whatever their present state is, and you notice their physiology when they're in their present state. So if their present state is something like they feel lack of motivation or something like that, you might notice their posture, their breathing, their skin color. There's lots of different things that you could be noticing about their physiology. So you calibrate, meaning you associate what you see with where they're at the moment. Okay? And then you would contrast that with their desired state. So when they're thinking about their desired state of how they want to be or what they want to achieve, and notice how they look and how they sound, like what's the quality of their voice, how they sound, what kind of language, later when we get into the language distinctions, what are some of the language distinctions that come out when they're talking about present state versus desired state? So we want to be able to notice, how are they when they're this way versus how are they when they're this way? So you'll hear that term a lot, to calibrate to a person's state or to their physiology in some way. Anything you would add, resource folks?
Being touched by somebody else, it brings you back into your body and into the present. And so you tend to have a better experience when you are present in your body rather than lost in your head.
Right.
I would also say, as it relates to calibration, to be open and curious to what it is for somebody, because the way we represent in a specific way when we're calibrated into a certain state of mind may be totally different from somebody else. So sometimes we might say, oh, they look sad, but they might just be contemplative. So I would say to stay very open to that and to figure out what that means for that person.
Mm-hmm. Excellent point. You know, as we move into this next part of the exercise, what I'm inviting you to do is just notice the difference right now. So if you do it like with hands up versus hands down, or feet open versus closed, close or far away, left side versus right side versus in front, just notice the difference in their physiology, how they shift, without necessarily interpreting it, giving meaning to it. Just notice what changes. And then ask them, so what was that like for you when I did it that way? Was it more comfortable? Was it less comfortable? Was it easier to receive? Was it harder to receive? So that they can report to you what their inner experience is. Because, and it's one of the things we get really good at in NLP, is giving sensory-based descriptions of another person's behavior, as opposed to interpreting. Sometimes we like to, tongue-in-cheek, call it hallucinating. That we are hallucinating somebody else's internal experience. And it's so much safer and often much more respectful to ask them. Just ask them, what is your experience with that? And then, one, it's you don't have to do the work of interpreting. You know, that makes it easy. And then you know. Now you know what it is, because you might have thought, like she was saying, that they were sad or upset or something like that. And it's like, no, I was just thinking about it. No problem.
So the question is, right, you know how you move from one side to the other side. Is there a way to do that? Like when I'm in a meeting or something, and I'm kind of reading the person's body language and maybe understanding how they're you know, if they're visual, kinesthetic, or auditory. Is it strange to say, oh, if I sit right here, is it strange to do that, or would you automatically do that? I mean, you know, shift to the side over here and talk to you a little bit. How would you approach that? Because I'm at a, maybe I have to change my table, but I sit across from people. And I can kind of see how they sit with the mirror matching. I guess we'll get that too, but does it seem weird to say, oh, well, we can stand up and go over here real quick. And maybe I'll jump like that, but how would we know to do it faster so we can get that engagement?
Right.
Sooner than later.
Good, right. Good questions.
Figure that out over the course of a few minutes, but is there a way to do it faster?
Well, I think what'll happen as you learn and you get better at it, one is you start noticing the cues sooner and more subtly. So you don't like need a big signal to get what it is. You can get a much smaller signal and be able to notice the change. So that allows you to interpret quicker, or you know, then you can decide earlier and respond to it more easily, more quickly, because you're noticing the subtleties. And so that comes with the sensory acuity practice and training, is that you can do it quicker. The other thing is, you know, NLP is about discovery. So to know whether or not it's weird, do it. And then you'll know. If it's weird to them, then you'll know it's weird. And if it's not, then it won't be. But you'll start then being able to make distinctions like that, and you'll notice patterns. Another big piece of NLP is pattern detection, and you start noticing patterns in other people and patterns, say, with your team, something like that. And so you would know, you start to observe and notice, with some team members it doesn't matter. But with other team members, it makes a big difference. Might make a big difference for them. And so with the others, you can sit anywhere you want, and with other ones, it's really important that you get to the meeting early and plop yourself where it's going to be the most useful, kind of a thing.
Front and back. Is there a general rule that front is closed and back is more open, or how we can really talk about that?
Yeah, that it, I think is, again, it kind of like all these things. It probably does make a difference to people, both on both sides. You know, if I walked up to Elena and I had my arms folded like this, do you think that would make a difference in that versus back here, perhaps? Okay, it's likely going to make a difference. But I personally wouldn't jump to the conclusion that this means closed and this means open, necessarily. But it's, again, something to explore and see what difference does it make. Yeah, a couple more questions, and then we'll actually practice, get it in experience. So, Alina first.
So is it possible that knowing that about yourself, that you're more likely to be cooperative on one side versus the other, is it possible to, like, train yourself? Because obviously you're not responding to the content of what you said, but you're responding to, like, your spatial position. So is there a way to train yourself to
Many
you
ways.
Respond, like, more positive?
Oh yes, and you're gonna get lots of ways in this training of how to do that, so that you can be more at choice, not only on the level of training yourself to position yourself if that's what you want to do, but you can also train yourself to have a completely different response no matter what they do. That you can choose your inner response regardless of what side they're on, kind of a thing. So there are other ways to do that, so that you become, again, you become a choice. You can choose the state you want to be in when you're getting feedback, no matter who it's from or where it's from or what side it's on. So there are different layers and levels of change that we'll work with.
Doesn't that kind of go to the intention of the person, like as you were walking up to her, and being aware of your intention? Do you want to be the authority and try to get somebody to do something? Not that that's the best way, but, you know, maybe you even learned that way of being a manager. And to be aware of what you've learned, what your intent is when you walk up. Do you want cooperation, or do you want to try to control something?
Oh, absolutely. I think intent is massive. You know, and getting clear on what your intent is, if you're the person giving the feedback, you know, is it that you want this person to really, you know, you want them to follow your order? Basically, you want obedience or whatever. If that's your intent, you're going to get a different response than if you want to invite their cooperation, or if you wanted to do it in a way that would preserve the relationship. All of that makes a huge difference, and it will organize your communication differently. So intent is huge. And as we practice more and more, you're going to have lots of opportunity to give feedback to each other. And to be clear on your intent, when you're giving feedback to somebody, is it that you're wanting to help them learn? Or is it that you're wanting to understand what it is that they were doing? Because maybe you saw what they did didn't make sense to you. So you were going, oh, so what was your intent with that? So you want to understand how they were processing in the moment. All of that makes a big difference. So let's practice. So same scenario. So I'm going to invite you. Do we normally do this one in twos or threes? Twos, okay? So I'm going to invite you to get into pairs again and do explore like we did here, supervisor to employee relationship. You can give feedback, and it doesn't necessarily have to be around being late, but you're going to give some feedback to your employee and explore doing it from these different psychogeography distinctions. And notice not only what changes with them and their response to you, but also notice what changes in you. As you take on these different postures and positions, what changes in you? Does your tone of voice change? Do your pictures change in your head? Does your feeling response change? And we'll do this fairly quickly. We'll do about 7 minutes or so each, and then we'll switch.
You want to do this in a standing or seated position?
I would prefer that you do it standing. Now, the reason for that is if you do these standing, you're going to have much more access to their, you can see more of their neurology that way. And so you can observe a lot more. It's going to be much more effective for your learning if you do it standing than sitting.
How much time per person?
7 minutes.
And we have lots of practice space, so feel free to go outside.
And we'll signal you when to switch.